Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday already, the 27th of October. We're going to be talking about polling in just a moment as we're less than a week from the midterm elections. Before we start, though, this trip is starting to fill up, which is terrific. We're going to Washington, D.C., and I wanted to let you know that it's going to take place during cherry blossom time. We, of course, can't assure that that will happen, but we've timed it so that we should be there when the cherry blossoms are coming out. March 30th through April 5. It's a bus trip. We're going to Gettysburg as well. We're going to take in a lot of Civil War history. We'll be going to Washington and all kinds of activities. We're going to do a broadcast from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. We'll go to Mount Vernon. We're going to Arlington Cemetery. We'll go to the Smithsonian and do a beautiful, elegant dinner cruise down the Potomac River. This is sounding better the more I talk about it, isn't it? I'm looking forward to it. So we're inviting you to join us, and we're filling up. We're only taking one bus, so I think that this will fill up fairly rapidly, considering we haven't mentioned it very often, and we've already had a number of people sign up. So please contact Progressive Travel if you're interested in joining us, and I hope you are. We went to Springfield, and almost everybody on that trip had a wonderful time, and I know we're going to have an equally wonderful time on this trip. Here's Progressive Travel's number if you'd like more information, 800-231-4391, 800-231-4391. Republicans will take the House. They will not take the Senate. That seems to be a familiar refrain on television and radio, and we're wondering if it's a result of looking at a massive number of polls and seeing that they all say about the same thing. Is that how we're coming up with what is likely to happen, although it may not, next Tuesday? Our guest this hour is Professor Gregory Hollick, visiting assistant professor of politics at Washington and Lee University and survey and statistics consultant for the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. He says that voters who are trying to make sense of the pervasive and sometimes contradictory polls need to ask several questions to understand exactly what the polls mean. So we'll find out what those questions are and ask them, and he'll answer them during the course of this hour. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Professor Hollick, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
So why are we getting this very familiar refrain from everybody that the Republicans will probably take the House next week and they'll have a harder time taking the Senate? Is everybody looking at a massive number of polls and they're all saying the same thing, or is it something else?
Well, this is generally what happens these days. Polling is ubiquitous now. So we're getting polling every day from a number of organizations. So the media is doing a lot of their own polling. Internal candidates and parties are doing a lot of polling. So we have a massive amount of polls with which to work with. And so we're able to make much more accurate predictions than we were in the past now, especially if you look at organizations like 538, which what they do is they aggregate a lot of the polls together. And so one of the problems with polling is one of the things about polling is that you have a margin of error with it. And so each poll only takes a subsample, a sample of the population, and with that we make a prediction as to which candidate is more likely to win or what kind of support one candidate has over the other. What we're able to do now, and which 538 does so well, is they actually aggregate a lot of those polls from different organizations and come up with a much better prediction and a prediction with a much smaller margin of error. So we're in a much better position these days to make these kinds of predictions, and generally we're quite right about whether or not one candidate will win over the other, and make these predictions about whether the Republicans will be able to take the House or the Senate. So we're quite confident that the Republicans will make significant gains in the House, but it looks like the Senate will probably stay Democratic.
Mm-hmm. And what about those internal polls? You hear those mentioned from candidates. Our internal poll shows this is a much closer race than people believe that it is. Who does those polls?
Well, that's the question you have to ask yourself. One of the questions: who did the poll? And you're not going to want to trust an internal poll as much as you will a poll from an independent polling organization like Pew or Gallup. They have very, very good reputations and have no interest in one candidate winning over the other. What you often get with these internal polls is you get something we call in the industry called push polling, where the before they ask you the question of who you support, they might give you a whole bunch of information about why their candidate might be better than the other one, which is, of course, something you don't want to do, which is going to bias the respondent towards one candidate over the other. So I'm much less willing to put confidence in these internal polls because, of course, they have a reason why they're doing the polling. That's not to say that all internal polls are bad for each candidate or each party. They're also polling to find out which issues the public is worried about, where they might stand, and they're trying to formulate their message based on what they're finding based on the polls. But I'm much more willing to trust an independent polling organization than I would over an internal candidate poll, because you need to know who the sponsor of the poll is. That's going to affect things.
There's been a lot of concern about cell phone getting a hold of people who only have cell phones, and you've said that you're one of those people who just has a cell phone. How do you take that into account?
Sure. This is something we've been very, very aware of in the industry, is the increase in people who are just cell phone only. They don't have a landline anymore. These people tend to be young, and they tend to be wired. That would cause us a lot of problems because a lot of our polling is based on landline phone numbers. So that's where we get the phone numbers. That's how we construct our samples. So we might have the possibility of being missing out on this portion of the public, and that portion of the public, it'd be a problem if they actually differ from the rest of the public, young people, if they differ in who they might support or their political attitudes. But we've been studying this for a little while now, and there's a couple of things that make me not too worried about this. First of all is that a lot of the new polls are actually taking into account the cell phone-only population, so they are tapping into that part of the population and including them in their sample. Second, we've done quite a few studies of looking at the cell phone-only population and then the non-cell phone-only population and comparing them on their political attitudes and things like that, and we're not finding too many differences. So the industry is aware of this, and people bring this up to me all the time, but we are taking it into account, and we're not finding too many differences anyway, so I'm not too worried about that aspect.
You've said that the proliferation of marketing studies has hurt public opinion polling, that people are turning down calls because everybody's calling them about, do you like this kind of soft drink, or do you like this kind of potato chip, or whatever the poll might be, what's your washing machine? Are we more likely to say sorry and hang up?
Yeah, I mean, one of the problems in the industry these days is response rate. So first of all, we want to make sure that our sample, when we pick it, covers the whole population. So everyone should have an equal likelihood of being selected for the survey. And then we also have the added problem of once we actually phone people, often they turn us down. And we've been seeing some fairly high non-response rates in the industry recently, especially with telephone polls. And my hypothesis is a lot of that has to do with people just not wanting to, they think that you're selling them something. And most polling that's done out there is actually not social science or political polling. It's actually marketing polling. So I'm trying to figure out whether you like Coke or Pepsi better or something like that. And I think that this turns off a lot of people, and they just don't want to be bothered. The fact that there's so much marketing polling out there really makes it tough on us as social science researchers who don't really have any intention of selling you anything. We just like to gather information in order to inform policy or just inform people about attitudes in the public. It makes it harder on us because it reduces the response rate for our polls and possibly damages the representativeness of those polls, which is key to us making a general statement about the American public or what Wisconsin voters are thinking.
Right.
So we are worried about this.
Professor Hallick, you have said that third parties make politics more difficult. It makes polling more difficult. are you referencing in this election the Tea Party's presence? Does that complicate polling, and if so, how?
Sure. Yeah, the Tea Party's presence is complicating things, and especially for the Republican Party, they're very aware that this is complicating things for them. But it complicates things for pollsters somewhat too, because most of the time we have this simple dichotomous race where you can just say, do you support the Democratic candidate or do you support the Republican candidate? And then we also want to know what party you identify with, and usually that's either the Republicans or the Democrats, or possibly you could be an independent as well. So it's making things, the situation, the political context itself is more complicated right now. We can see this, how the Tea Party is affecting everything, in that in the primaries, the Tea Party candidates were able to take a lot of races compared to the traditional Republican candidate, because in these primaries, we get a lot of more. It's heavily affected by committed people. People are political junkies more often than not, and so the really passionate Tea Party part of the Republican Party was able to take a lot of these races. But now in the general election, it's much a much larger swath of the public, and we're seeing that the Tea Party candidate is in some cases hurting the Republican ticket. Most specifically, the most highly publicized one is in Delaware, where Christine O'Donnell is down quite noticeably to Chris Coons, and it looks like a moderate Republican candidate would have won that Senate seat, probably, given the bias towards the Republicans in this particular political climate right now. But you've also got in Nevada, you know, it could go the other way, where right. Harry Reid is in great danger of losing his seat in Nevada, his Senate seat, to Engel. And she's a Tea Party candidate as well. But it's really complicating the situation quite a bit.
Yeah. We're talking about polling this hour of the program with the election less than a week away. The polls are all over the place right now. And we're discussing, well, I have yet to ask him, and I'm going to momentarily after I give you the phone number, are there polls that you really can't trust? We have to talk about margin of error and why polling is done, too. What purpose does it serve? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And we have calls coming in, so let's just start with Sarah from Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. Hi. Okay, so you were just talking about how a lot of people don't want to take polls, and I was wondering if it's possible that there might be a correlation between your tendency to vote a certain way and not wanting to take a poll.
Yeah, that's a great question. We haven't found too many tendencies there. So there isn't really too much of a tendency to support the Republicans or the Democrats among non-voters. Although usually people who don't participate in polls or people who don't participate in politics in general, those people tend to be of a lower socioeconomic status, right? Lower education, lower income, things like that. So that can lead to a bias towards, and those people tend to vote Democratic. So those kinds of demographics can lead to a bias towards towards Republicans. One of the things we're noticing these days is how do you identify, one of the problems we have is how do you identify a likely voter? That's the thing for elections. You're trying to sample the people who will actually vote. So you need that connection between the people, whether they say they'll vote, and then if they actually vote. That's the key for us right now. And I'm actually noticing a gap in that, if you try and identify a likely voter, it tends to favor the Republicans more than the Democrats. But if you actually look at registered voters, so people are actually registered, that tends to close the gap quite a bit. So the Democrats have more of an advantage in registered voters, and we're seeing right now a big advantage, well, not a huge advantage, but some advantage for the Democrats in early voting, too. So the challenge for us is to try and map out and properly poll the people who are going to actually vote. And that's a challenge for us, and we're noticing some differences in that kind of factor.
So how do you determine if somebody is a likely voter?
Well, often you just ask them, are you likely to
That's
vote?
That's a good way.
So we know there are problems with self-reporting on these things, because there's a response bias towards, wanting to look good socially, right? So you want to say, of course I'm going to vote. Mm-hmm. I'm a participant in my democracy, it sounds good to do that. But there's other ways we do it, too. Sometimes we actually look for that person. You ask them whether or not they voted in the last election. So you use that as a proxy of whether or not they're going to vote in this election, and that's another way to ask it. Another way is like I said, asking whether or not they're registered to vote or not. So there's various different ways, and the polling organizations actually differ in how they try to identify likely voters, and that introduces a little bit of randomness or some difference across the polling organizations in their predictions as to who's going to win.
Bill from Madison asks, which polls do you respect the most for integrity and perhaps also for accuracy? And are there little-known polls that are worth looking into?
Definitely the respect level is very high for the independent organizations that have been around for a while, and that means Gallup. Gallup does a lot of polling. I have a high respect for their ability to predict races. I also have a high degree of respect for Pew. They do a lot of polling as well, and they're releasing a lot of interesting polls every week. They have a high degree of respectability in the industry. I also would really recommend people to take a look at 538.com. So, mm-hmm. And in fact, it's on the New York Times often as well. And what they do is they go an extra level, and they, like I said, they aggregate the polls together, which gives us a better degree of accuracy and a better ability to say this one candidate is consistently ahead of the other candidate, even though they've tended to be close. We can say, well, what they go is the further step and say, based on this large amount of aggregation of polls, we can predict that the Republican candidate might win over the Democratic candidate. So those are the sources that I would most likely go to. I'd be careful of internet polls because often those aren't representative samples. They aren't probability samples. I'd also be careful of polls that are like I said, coming from the parties themselves or the internal candidates' polls. But in terms of other lesser-known polls, you would look at just oftentimes universities themselves are doing polls on a statewide basis. So sometimes you might be just interested in your own state. And so Pew or Gallup might not be doing, say, the Wisconsin Senate race as much. So in that case, you might want to turn to a poll done by more locally.
St. Norbert College is one that we do polls with.
Exactly. Yeah. So in those more local races, if you're interested in that, there are a lot of reputable organizations, often tied to universities, who are interested in looking at the more local races at mm-hmm. the House and Senate level and governor level as well.
Nancy in Milwaukee. Hi.
Good morning to you. I'm calling to say that I am totally against all polls, and this is the reason. I feel that there's a very large segment of our population who don't take the time or make any effort at all to find out who's running or what these people's agendas even are. But they want to vote. They want to claim that they're a loyal, patriotic citizen. So they dutifully run off to the polls on voting day and vote according to what the polls have told them, who is ahead, because these people also want to feel part of the winning team. And I think that the polls actually keep people from feeling that they have to inform themselves. If we had no polls, people would be, I think, more willing to take the time and effort to find out who's running and what these people stand for. But the polls give them cues. And because they want to be on the winning team, they would rather just listen to the polls instead of finding out
vote for the front runner. Is there truth in that, Professor Hollick?
That's a good point. There is some truth to that. People are affected by the fact that there's so much polling out there. And in fact, the media is somewhat to blame about this, in that in the industry we call this focusing on the horse race, that they don't focus on the issues very much. It's much simpler to just focus on who's ahead. And you can get somewhat of a bandwagon effect with that, where if one candidate has a certain a lead over another candidate, that gives them more credibility. It helps them raise more money. In the eyes of voters, it gives them more credibility as well. So you can get that kind of an effect. You can get a dampening of voter turnout for a candidate that is trailing in the polls because people just think, well, why should I come out and vote for that candidate if they're not likely to win anyway? And you can also get the reverse effect, that you can get greater voter turnout for one candidate who happens to be ahead in the polls. But I would say that polling does provide a very, very valuable service for society, and that it tells it tells the public what their fellow members of the public are thinking. And we have all kinds of evidence that that our polls are representative, and it's a good way to to let both political leaders know and the rest of the public know where they're where everyone else stands on issues, and then not just on who what candidate they support, but also on the issues. But I totally agree with her that there tends to be this focus on who's winning and who's not winning, and less of a focus on what the issues are, which is a problem in campaigns.
Yeah, I think that's true, but certainly many of the polls do look at the issues, and those are the meaty, interesting parts of the poll. What do we think of the war in Iraq or Afghanistan? What do we think about our futures? What do we think about abortion? And, I mean, the list goes on, which explains you have to look at those, the answers to those questions to find out why we're favoring one person over another or how important certain issues are to us, which may influence governing.
Exactly. We don't just look at, is one candidate ahead of the other. We look at a lot of issues, too, and we correlate those issues with who you intend to vote for. And of course, right now, James Carville's statement about is the economy stupid is very, very appropriate right now, in that this is the issue that a lot of people are looking at: jobs, the economy. Those things are not good and haven't improved enough, people think, over the change from the Bush administration to the Obama administration. And so that's one of the reasons why a lot of Democratic candidates are in trouble and probably likely will lose their seats. Is people are focusing on the economy a lot, and they're responding to the Republicans on this and don't think the Democrats have done a good enough a job about this. Issues like immigration are important, too. You see this... The race for governor in Arizona, where Jan Brewer, this is where the immigration issue is very important and sort of one of the focus points for the immigration issue. Jan Brewer is well ahead of her challenger in the governor's race, despite totally blanking on her debate introduction, which I've almost never seen in a political debate before, where she just almost didn't know what to say. And yet, because of the immigration issue, she's got a large degree of support because she's on the right side of that issue right now for the members of the Arizona public.
Professor Gregory Hollick, visiting assistant professor of politics at Washington and Lee University, survey and statistics consultant for the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Our guest as we look at polling, and our phone number, we have one line open. Thank you, Nancy, for your call. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, Patti LuPone will be with us, Tony Award-winning actress and singer. Her book is, she has a memoir, and it's absolutely fascinating. She has interesting stories about John Houseman, who was very instrumental in her career, Kevin Kline, who was the first big love of her life for many years, and behind the scenes that goes on for huge shows like Evita and Gypsy and many of the other programs that she has starred in. So Patti will be with us, and we'll play some of her songs, too. I am a Broadway show tune lover at heart. You know, I used to do a show like that at the University of Iowa. I had a radio. That was my first radio show, and I played Broadway show tunes, and nobody liked it. But I had the time of my life. I know you can't just have a show for yourself, but it was fun. It was fun. I was just in the wrong place, wrong time, wrong era. Let's go back to phone calls, and our next caller is Diane from Milwaukee. Hi, Diane.
Thank you. Why doesn't the media do its job and tell us who's lying on these commercials? Some of them are so outrageous.
Okay, well, we're not talking about commercials. We're talking about polling. Can we talk about that?
Well, the thing is, that affects polling if you believe the commercials. And the media has a job to tell us the truth, and they're falling down on their job.
Well, the media is a part of this, too. The media is the main way that we find out about polls. And they do try to do this. The media does try to check on these political advertisements to see if perhaps you know they're stretching the truth or they're outright lying, especially on the internet too. So if you go to CNN.com or a lot of these other websites, they do have sort of fact checkers, what they're called. And they're trying to keep up with this as much as they can. Of course, they can't keep up with every ad, but it is they are it is part of their job, and it is something that they're doing for sure.
It's just hard. You can spend your whole life doing that. There are so many ads now. They're just constant. If you were going to check all of them and watch the ads, you'd spend a couple hours every day doing that.
Yeah, it's the main way that that political campaigns are run these days. Almost all of the money that political campaigns raise, it goes towards television advertisement. So it's an incredible job to try and keep up with this all the time, and the media has other things that they have to do as well. They just expect, it's expected in politics that the Republicans will stretch the truth on their side and the Democrats will try to stretch the truth on their side with negative advertising. So it's almost like in some ways we just expect that to be part of campaigns. And you've also got the problem, too, of the increased partisanship of the media as well. We don't have Walter Cronkite anymore.
I know, I miss him.
Yeah, so now we've got especially the presence of Fox News has really changed the industry quite a bit, because Fox News has its own agenda with what it's trying to do, and so this increased partisanship leads to it's tougher to find the information source that moderate voters can trust. You can certainly find an information source that you trust if you happen to be conservative or liberal.
Yes,
but where do you go for that kind of news source that a moderate person can trust? It's tough.
Yeah. Jeff in Winneconne, hi.
Hi. The other day, Joy Cardine did a straw poll, and Russ Feingold clearly won. St. Norbert's did the same, another poll that said that they were really close. You know, I don't see that. During the election, when Obama won against Hillary Clinton, they said the same thing, that Hillary Clinton was just tied up with him. And it was clear to see, you know, that Obama had won that. Now, if they're calling people with hard lines, aren't they getting only one perspective, the older person's perspective, and no other perspective at all?
Yeah, well, this is a good point, but no, I mean our polls generally, if it's from a reputable organization, are representative. So we do have we try and take cell phones only into account, and we are noticing that there aren't that many differences actually between the cell phone only population and people who do still have hard lines. So generally, I would say that the polling is not biased in that direction. Also, I have to address that there are just some differences across the polls. So depending on the context, the day, things may be a little bit different from one poll to another. There is some randomness to it, so there is some error associated with it. What we have to do is look at the polls as a trend and see if we can see one trend towards maybe Feingold or a trend towards Johnson. And so far we have identified that trend as definitely towards Johnson. So the probability of Johnson winning the race is higher than Feingold, although Feingold has closed the gap somewhat more recently. So you have to try not to focus on just one poll. You try to sort of look at the pattern across several polls, and you get a much clearer picture of who might be ahead of the other.
Let's talk about this margin of error, because in that race that you just mentioned, the Feingold-Johnson race, the polls had shown that Johnson was pretty substantially ahead, and then Feingold seemed to be narrowing the gap, and now we have another poll this week that shows that Johnson is ahead beyond the margin of error. Can we talk about this margin of error and about how things may change? Do you have to look at it for a week to see where the trend is? Because last week it was something different than it is now. What's going on with that?
Well, first of all, we have to understand this concept of the margin of error, which is something that the media often doesn't report. So often, if you get a poll and candidate A has 49% and candidate B has 47%, and the margin of error is plus or minus 3%, that's actually a statistical dead heat. But often what the media does is says, well, candidate A with 49% is actually ahead by 2 percentage
points.
So what the margin of error is it's just a recognition of the fact that when we take a sample, we're going to have some certain degree of accuracy, but it's not going to be perfect in saying what we try to, from that sample, say what the whole population thinks. And we have some degree of where we're not as accurate on that. So that's what the margin of error takes into account. So if you have 47% support for one candidate and the margin of error is plus or minus 3, so it could go either way, 3 percentage points. What we're able to do these days, like I said, with sites like 538.com, is aggregate some more of those polls and get a larger sample size and reduce that margin of error so that we can be much more confident in our prediction for one person over another. But if a race is close, like the Feingold race is right now, you have to be very, very careful not to make too heavy predictions for one over the other if you're very close to the margin of error.
Thanks, Jeff, for the call. Steve in Madison, hi. Hello, Steve.
Hello.
Yes,
can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I just wanted to take exception. I think because of the margin of error discussion, I want to take exception to the suggestion that aggregating polls gives a more valid or reliable statistic. I think statisticians would disagree with you on that. There are all kinds of methodological and longitudinal issues that relate to that. I think the average person might say, well, I see 5 polls indicate a certain trend, but statistically that doesn't mean anything more than saying that after 2 flips of a coin, if you get heads, you're more likely to get heads on the next flip of the coin. And I think it's misleading and could cause the public to come to false conclusions by just because there are a whole bunch of polls at any given time that pick one client or one candidate over another.
Well, I would have to say this to you as a statistician myself that's just inaccurate. That by aggregation, what we can do is get a larger sample size, and the larger our sample size, the more accurate we're able to be in our prediction about what it is for the general population. So through the aggregation of polls that have been taken around a very similar time period, we're able to be much more confident, and statistically this is just the case, that we have a better ability to say what is going on in the general population. So I would just have to disagree with you on that.
An email from Larry in Oshkosh. Do pollsters take into account feedback effects when they publish a poll? In other words, once people know the results of a poll, might they be more or less likely to vote?
We don't really take that into account in every single poll, but we do know that is part of the effect. There's a reverse effect that once a poll is reported, that is taken in by the public, and then the public then responds to that poll. So there's really a feedback loop, and it is sort of a very organic environment, public opinion, where people are expressing their opinions, and then that expression of opinion by society then affects each individual as well. It's not always the case that it goes in one direction or the other. So that's why it's hard to make any kind of general statement about the effect of polling on public perceptions, because sometimes it can cause perceptions to go one way and sometimes it can go the other. But certainly she is definitely right that this is an organic relationship and that there are effects going both ways. So the expression of public opinion does affect the attitudes of individual members of the public, certainly.
Jerry and Menasha, hi.
Hi, we are not addressing a segment of the population in these polls, namely the do not call list people. Now, I am on that list. Please don't give out my phone number. And I have not yet received one political call. So, therefore, I think there is that hunk of people, that group, that are not being polled. What does your guest have to comment on that?
Yeah, I'm on the do not call list, too, and I'm getting political calls.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point, that the do not call list does not actually apply to social science polling. So that just applies to marketing polling. And rightly so, politicians have realized that there is a great benefit to doing polling about society in general, that's not directed towards marketing or to selling anybody anything. So you are on that list, and I often get this question from people. Well, I've never got a call from a poll before a pollster. How do I, you know, this can't be representative, but I assure you that you are included in the list. It's just that you haven't happened to be randomly selected yet. So there's a lot of people in the United States, and just because you haven't been called to participate in a poll before does not mean that the polls are not accurate or covering you in that sample.
So what will you do today, Jerry, if you get that call? Jerry, are you there? Jerry's gone. I wonder if Jerry would take the call or not, if it finally happened. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we're on the do call list here. We're interested in hearing what your thoughts are about polling, and we're getting a better sense of margin of error and which polls we ought to pay attention to and why there is polling. I wonder where we are in terms of polling in other, comparing our country with other countries in the world. It seems to me as though we're kind of a betting country in a way. We bet on the horses, we bet on football, we bet on a lot of things in this country. Does it mean that we have more polls because we kind of like that? We welcome your phone calls. Our lines are busy right now, but keep trying and you'll get through. 800-486-8655. The email talk at WPR.org, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The actress and Broadway star Patti LuPone will be with us the second hour of today's program. This hour, it's polling. Our guest is Professor Gregory Hollick, visiting assistant professor of politics at Washington and Lee University and survey and statistics consultant for the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Jerry is next on the road. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
The gentleman indicated earlier that the Tea Party complicated the polling. I failed to see how that could be the case, since the Tea Party is not really a political party, but rather an ideology, number one. And number two, he also mentioned Fox News and bias that they might have, but I watch CNN, Fox News, and MSNBC, and I've never heard anybody on Fox News say that they had a tickle go up their leg, for Obama. So they all have agendas, and selecting Fox News as an example is disingenuous, I believe. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Okay, so, can you remind me of the first question?
What did the first hit? Well, why don't you take the second, and then we'll try to remember what the... Tea Party thing. He didn't understand why it would have been... It's not a political party. He doesn't understand why it would be difficult to poll those people.
He's absolutely right, that it doesn't complicate the fact that we're going to get them in the polls. The Tea Party is rightly an ideology, or you could call it a political movement. And so it really isn't a party itself. So it's not complicating things that way. The way it complicates things, though, is that these people would probably traditionally have voted for the Republicans. So the fact that this movement is part of the political context in the situation right now makes it difficult to find out whether or not those people are going to support the Republican candidate, if it is a traditional Republican candidate, or whether or not they're going to, support the Tea Party candidate. If a Tea Party candidate won in a primary, in a Republican primary, will regular Republican voters vote for that Tea Party candidate? So it is incredibly complicating the situation for the Republicans. And I think if you talk to any Republican pollster or any member of the Republican Party, they would definitely agree that this is a difficult situation for them. How are they going to incorporate the people who support the Tea Party? And what are they going to do with those situations where the Tea Party candidate has managed to win the primary in that situation? So it's not complicating our ability to poll these people. What it is complicating the political scene and complicating our interpretation of those polls.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jerry. Daniel in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, good morning. My question is about polling, but it's a little off-center than the actual questions going on. How come more politicians don't poll when it's not a political year? Because it seems like it's all the talking points and sound bites, and I don't really even think they know what the people want, meaning all the voters.
A great point. They are polling all the time. It's just that we don't hear about it as much when it's not in, you know, right up to the election season. So that's when polling really comes out of the woodwork. But believe me, the government is one of the largest, and the politicians themselves are one of the largest users of polls and pollsters themselves. And so they are polling all the time to find out what the public wants, what the public attitudes are on all a range of issues, and they use that information to try and formulate policy and their positions. So it really is an integral part of how campaigns are run, and then also how the government is run now. So really, public opinion polling is done all the time. You just don't hear about it as much in the media, but it, believe me, it is affecting their policies for sure.
So are we a poll-happy society? Do we poll more than England or India or Japan or South Africa?
We are definitely a poll-happy society. That's partly the fact that scientific polling was really developed in the United States. So we've been the pioneers in polling, and so we definitely are a polling-happy society. But those techniques and the appeal of polling has definitely spread throughout the world. So that certainly in Europe, there's a lot of polling going on in Europe, and even now we are able to do very, very accurate scientific polls in places like China and Iraq, which we would have never dreamed of before. How do you accurately poll China? And now we're able to do that. So we're getting a much, much better picture on political attitudes in countries that we've never really been able to look at before. So it is spreading now, but certainly the U.S. is a leader in the development of polling, and we love it. We love the numbers.
Yeah, we do. Let's go to Mike next in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Let's see. Now, polls are good for pollsters because they got a job.
they're it's great for me. Yep.
Because then they can plan their talking points and where they're going to throw their money around. It's good for talk show hosts because you got something to talk about for an hour. But I'm a voter, and whether I ever hear a poll or not, one candidate is going to lose, one candidate is going to win. And so it doesn't seem to have any pragmatic purpose for me or probably for the voting public. So I'd like to have your comment on that.
A fantastic criticism of polling that happens during election seasons. Like I talked about, we call this horse race polling. So, and the media loves horse race polling. They focus a lot on which candidate is ahead and which is not, and then they talk about why that candidate might be ahead or not and the implications for that. This understandably frustrates a lot of voters that they might actually want to know a little bit more about the issues. And we do a lot of polling on issues and attitudes about issues. It's just that it doesn't get as much play in the media. There's a lot of focus on the horse race. And I totally understand how that can be frustrating for certain voters. But there is a lot of polling done out there, especially in between elections, about significant substantive issues and where the public stands on those issues. It's just that we get caught up in who might be winning coming up to the elections.
Well, and I think people who listen to public radio certainly are extremely well informed on the issues. We've watched lots and lots of debates. We've watched all the debates. We've analyzed what the candidates have had to say. And it's, a little frosting on the cake to find out what we all think about it. I think, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah, definitely.
Thank you, Mike, for the call. Donald is next from Portage. Hi, Donald.
Hi there. My question is, I'm wondering what percentage of people that are called on these political polls respond.
Oh, yeah. Good question. Mm-hmm. We are a little bit worried about that with some of the polls. We've been noticing, that's what we call in the industry a response rate. So out of the people that we actually do select for the poll, how many people respond? And sometimes we can get, we generally get about 70 to 80%. Is a really good response rate, and we're getting that on a lot of polls. But we are noticing, especially with a lot of telephone polls, we are dropping sometimes into the region of 30 or 40%, which brings up alarm bells for me. And this is one of the problems in the industry, is that the American Association for Public Opinion Research is trying to institute standards about reporting the response rates, because you got to be a little bit suspicious of a poll when they don't report the response rate. They may be hiding something. And if the response rate is very low, you would have less confidence in whether or not those poll results represent the full population. So I would say, first of all, that most of our response rates are fairly good, into the 70 to 80% range. But there are some polls that are falling below that, and we should be concerned about that.
What about this sample size? I read the results of lots of polls when it looks as though it's usually 1,200, 2,000. Can you get an accurate sampling of the American public does it have to be a certain number, 1,200 or above? If it's a huge number, is it more accurate?
Oh, well, that's the great thing about sampling is that statistically we don't need to sample more than about 1,000 people to get an accurate representation of what the American public thinks.
Really?
Yeah. I know it's sort of mind-boggling, but if you go up to 2,000, that will give you a little bit more accuracy too. But once you get beyond that level, it really doesn't help you to do a sample that much statistically to do a sample of 20,000 people or 40,000 or 50,000 or 100,000. And in fact, you have to take into account the cost-benefit ratio, right? So it's a cost prohibitive to do a survey that large. It's going to cost you a lot of money, and it really doesn't give you much more bang for your buck. So really, you can trust the surveys that have a sample size of about 1,000, and that's why you often see that most surveys that are representative samples of the United States have sample sizes of around 1,000 to 2,000.
John in Mount Horeb, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
If you covered this earlier, sorry. I was wondering, why aren't polls better designed to get at why people feel a certain way? Because I'll hear, even on the news, not just in campaign ads, 80% of Americans are disappointed in healthcare reform, and then the Republicans will run an ad saying 80%
right.
of Americans
yes.
want them to do it instead.
Right.
And the information is much more subtle than that. And I think that's the important information, why people are disappointed in Congress, not just that they are disappointed. And I'll hang up and listen.
All right, John. Thank you.
Good point, John. A lot of polls really, they do sort of make it a response of, do you support, do you not support, do you like, do you not like. And sometimes we don't dig enough into the why. But we do ask in most polls, you might get the media just present one poll result. But really in that poll, we asked about 20 or 30 different questions that got into all the details of why someone doesn't support health care. And there's various reasons we figured out why. Because they think they might lose Medicare benefits, because they think it's going to be too expensive. There's all kinds of different reasons why. It's just that often those things don't get reported. So we do go into the why. But sometimes we just focus a little bit too much on the poll result. It's the same thing with horse race polling, where we just say, okay, this candidate is ahead of the other candidate. Well, why? What are the issues that are actually driving people to support one candidate over the other? That's what we really need to get into. And sometimes the media just doesn't take enough time to give us that background and context on these things.
We go to Tabitha from La Crosse. Hi.
Hello. I wanted to ask a little bit more information regarding cell phones. I know that was brought up a couple times today. I was particularly curious because I know that economics will definitely affect people's political views. And I know that especially over the last couple years when cell phones have become really popular, originally cell phones were something that you could only have if you had a lot of extra money, and now that's not so much the case, at least in my experience. So I'm wondering how, if the studies regarding cell phone, no landline people are basically more based on like a long-term thing, so that it would maybe be towards the middle now, in that people originally had more money with cell phones, and then they, had one viewpoint. People have less money with cell phones, and they have an oppositional viewpoint. I was just kind of curious for more information on the cell phones.
Sure, yeah. Cell phones is a huge issue that we're looking at. And you're right that the economic gap between people who have cell phones and people who don't have cell phones has really, really almost disappeared now. In fact, it's very funny that in other countries, like, say, in Eastern Europe, you've actually got a greater amount of people with cell phones than people who had landlines, because they almost, during the time when landlines were popular, they just didn't have as much exposure. And now, all of a sudden, it seems like they skipped that stage, and went straight to cell phones in some ways. So we have that going on in other countries. But with respect to our country, the thing we're most worried about is that people who are cell phone only, even though a lot of other people have cell phones, they also have landlines, the people who are cell phone only tend to be very young. And is there a difference between these people and the people who don't have cell phones? And surprisingly enough, we're not finding too many differences on that. And the only time we need to be worried about not covering that portion of the population is if there's really some things about them that make them very different that will affect their political opinions. And we have been testing that quite a bit. Not only do we include them in the survey samples now often, so that takes care of the problem right there because they're in the survey sample, but also when we take a look at the differences, we really aren't finding that there's, say, more Republicans who happen to be cell phone only or, people who support health care more if they're cell phone only or things like that or the war in Iraq and things like that. So we really, really aren't noticing too many big differences there.
We have time for one more call. Tony in Fond du Lac. Hi.
Hi. Originally, at the beginning of the hour, the discussion about whether polls affect how we vote, wanting to be on the bandwagon of the winner or maybe even voting for the underdog. But during the hour, I think my thoughts have changed to kind of with a woman that talked about how ads, political ads, are they true or not? I'm wondering if polls fall into the same effect. It's a big business. Somebody's got to be paying to have the polls conducted. I would assume that's candidates and or special interest groups, maybe some media. But once the poll is out and has been released, it's free information. And so reporting radio stations, that sort of thing, can just report the results where they pay. So are the sources that pay for your polls influencing us? Maybe not in an equal way.
Okay, we have 10 seconds, Professor. Sorry.
You always want to pay attention to who the source is for the poll. Always look at it and look for reputable sources like news organizations and try to be very suspicious of polls that are coming from the campaigns themselves or sponsored by interest groups.
Thank you, Professor Hollick. You were great. I hope you'll say yes if we call you again.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. Professor Gregory Hollick, visiting assistant professor of politics at Washington and Lee University. He's also a survey and statistics consultant for the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the hour. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production. And thanks for all of your intelligent questions. We'll return right after the latest news. Stay with us.